Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Grapevine Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm Chris, and I am an alcoholic. I am subbing today for Nikki. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. I am coming to you today from New York, where the General Service Conference is happening this week. You can enjoy the Grapevine Open Meeting every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms, on aagrapevine.org, and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We are glad you are all here, especially newcomers. If you are new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery from alcoholism. This is today's daily quote. The Grapevine Daily Quote for April 29th, short and sweet. We all know whose inventory we take in AA, right? That's from an article called Tradition 10. It was submitted from a person in Manhattan in the May 1971 issue. It's also, that same article is in the Best of Grapevine, Volume 1. You can receive the daily quote as a daily email at aagrapevine.org, or you will find it on the Grapevine app every morning. This is an excerpt from this month's Grapevine magazine. This is in the Dear Grapevine section, and it's titled In All Our Affairs. For the better part of my 15 years of sobriety, I had taken the steps with a sponsor, gotten a higher power, made amends, gotten a job, and had a child. I was sponsoring and involved in service. Heck, I was even nice to people. What more do you want from me? Carrying the message is important. Giving my number to a new person, bringing a shaky newcomer a cup of coffee, taking meetings into treatment centers, jails, and halfway houses, grabbing coffee with an old timer who's going through a rough time, and giving someone a hug when they come back from a relapse. One day I heard in a meeting, it's easy to love the lovable ones, and something in me shifted. I felt like I had been sucker punched. Being loving, kind, and tolerant in AA is easy, but am I showing the same grace to my family, friends, and coworkers? When I took an honest assessment of myself, the answer was no. I wasn't practicing these principles in all my affairs. I reached out to my sponsor and others who had the emotional sobriety I was missing and asked for help. More spiritual growth was and always is the answer. I leaned into my higher power and took a hard look at myself to understand the true nature of my wrongs. I learned that half steps don't cut it. I must take full steps. And that's from HN in Ketchum, Idaho. And here is a reading from our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the beginning of chapter 3, more about alcoholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never men, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. We never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. Okay, this will be a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing by attendees, so please sit back, relax, and listen. We often hear it is best to try to identify with the speakers rather than compare your story with theirs. Okay, I want to introduce Liza. I'm going to meet Liza this October, I think, up in Central New York at an event. Okay, go ahead, Liza. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm an alcoholic. My name is Liza. I'm incredibly grateful to be here today with you all, sharing this space and having the opportunity to share my story. My sobriety date is December 27th, 1998, and it took me a little while when I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous to surrender completely. And I loved the readings that Chris read this morning. I didn't understand what incomprehensible demoralization was until I surrendered completely and worked with a sponsor looking at my history of my drinking. I do have a sponsor. I have a home group. I have a service position. And I do pass along the message that was given to me to sponsees. And so what it was like, you know, growing up in a home that was pretty chaotic and full of alcoholism, and I didn't understand that until I came to AA. However, my biological mom got killed in a drunk driving accident at the age of 27 after she had abandoned myself and two of my sisters, and we were placed in foster care. And I can remember a lot of feelings that I would just bottle up and not know how to deal with right from that time on until I got into AA and started the step work. So my dad did get my oldest sister and I back when we were in grade school, and we continued to live in a chaotic alcoholic home. And I don't say that I'm alcoholic because of that. It's just that is one of the things that some of the things I learned in my growing up was alcohol was always a part of life. And it was nothing for me to go over to the refrigerator and grab a beer for my dad, crack it open, and have a sip on the way over to him. And so I did learn a little bit about Alcoholics Anonymous as he did his time in jail for 1 year after his fifth DWI, and he came to Alcoholics Anonymous after that for a short time. And that was probably my first introduction, although I didn't go to meetings with him, but I watched his life change immensely. I was declared legally blind in high school, and this was really a hard piece for me in my life, because I did not know whether I was going to go totally blind walking down the high school hallways or what was going to actually happen to me. So fear really encompassed my life. And that's probably when I really started indulging in more alcohol in my junior year of high school. And by the time I was a senior in high school, I had met a fellow who liked to drink like I liked to drink, and we were off and running. So they really never diagnosed my vision until after high school, and I was eventually diagnosed with a form of macular degeneration called Stargardt's. I got the genes from my parents. We usually have a dominant gene and a recessive gene, and I got both recessive genes. So my retina is deteriorating. I had enough vision for most of my life to be able to get along pretty well in life. And although it was difficult, very difficult, to not be able to read standard size print and have to use large print and try to figure out how to get along in life. Today, my vision is decreased to the place where I have light perception. I can't read anything. Everything I do is electronic. I never learned Braille growing up because I had enough vision to navigate the world and life without Braille. So it's just been in the past 10 years that I've gotten to this place with my vision impairment. But that played a big part in growing up and losing my mom as a young person and watching my dad with his alcoholism and just, you know, engaging in alcohol whenever I could to bury some of those feelings and bury some of that fear. And when my first son was conceived, I had the ability to put down the alcohol. By the time my second son had been conceived, alcoholism had a grip on me, and I was unable to put down alcoholism. And that's the progression of this disease that I learned, you know, when I got into Alcoholics Anonymous. I was a blackout drinker, and so many times I had no idea what happened the night before and how I may have gotten home. You know, there were times that I would ride my bicycle home from the bar, and that was pretty dangerous, not only for myself, but for those around me, for the cars, et cetera, because, you know, I just had no clue how I got home in those blackouts. I would try to switch my drinks often so that I wouldn't get so drunk and blackout. In my adult life, once my children were born, I didn't really want to drink to the degree I was drinking, but I didn't know any other way, right? I drank because I was happy. I drank because I was sad. I was drinking because something didn't go right, you know, and I didn't want to end up like my mom had ended up. And from what I had heard from family members, she drank, you know, pretty heavily. And that's why she was in a vehicle with a drunk driver at the time that she got killed. So I really didn't want to die like my mom had died. And the blackouts were getting worse. The fights now had started in the home. I didn't remember them. My seven-year-old son would say things like, "Oh, Dad, don't worry. She'll pass out before long. She'll have one more beer and she'll pass out." And when I came to, or the next day when I was a little more alert and we'd have these conversations and my husband would tell me what happened and I had no recollection, you know, that incomprehensible demoralization had set in, right? Because I did not want to be that person. I wanted my kids to have a good mom. I wanted to be a good person. I was employed at the time. I couldn't really go to work when I was supposed to every day. I always rationalized, you know, why it was okay for me to call in because I was hungover or I just needed a day off to try to pull myself back together. And so the time came that I had been in a real big argument and with my husband, and I went down in the car to pass out because I needed to just sleep off some of that alcohol. And when I woke up, I was terrified that I had left my children by themselves. And so that is ultimately what brought me to my bottom. I was an emotional wreck at that point in my life. I cried over everything, whether it was good, whether it was bad. So I did go to detox for 7 days. And when I got home from detox, it talks in the big book that we have to admit to our most inner self that we are alcoholic, and alcohol is but a symptom of our disease. And other mood altering substances took place in my life, and I needed to come to that place of complete surrender. So when I left detox, I called the hotline here in our local area, and the wonderful lady who took care of our answering service linked me with a woman in AA, and we began talking before I left detox. And so she began sharing the language of the heart with me, and she met me at my first AA meeting. And when we connected, we began in the big book immediately. And I'm so thankful for that. You know, I didn't understand how I was powerless over alcohol. I did believe in a God, but I was very angry at God for lots of reasons, right? So I didn't even want to hear the word God. And to turn my will and my life over, I was just like, okay, I will. And I didn't really understand any of that, but I just began believing in those things. And so as this temporary sponsor and I worked through the big book, you know, I had admitted that I was powerless, even though I didn't understand it completely. And I began to find that power greater than myself that I could turn to. And I just kept coming back, and I kept coming back. And eventually I got another sponsor who took me through the steps again. And I wrote out my first step at that point. And that's when I could truly see how I was powerless over alcohol, because every single time I put alcohol in my body, I didn't drink like normal people. I drank to oblivion. I drank to blackout. I lost all self-respect, all self-esteem. And so as we continued working through the steps, I was able to identify all of that hurt and anger and resentment that had built up inside toward my mom for abandoning me and then dying. And so I was able to look at my part in that and really be able to work through those feelings and those emotions and start to open up to the sunlight of the spirit. And that was really an amazing experience for me, because I could never even get close to my stepmom for years because of holding on to this anger and hate and all this other stuff that I grew up with. And so I got through those steps, and I went to the grave and made graveside amends to my mom and began to learn how to love, not only love myself, but love others around me. And, you know, love is a powerful thing. And I am so grateful that I have been able to open up to love others, love myself. and just be gentle and kind to people who are in my path today. So with that, you know, I got a home group, and my sponsor and I would meet at my home group and we'd work through the steps. And she told me I needed to get a service position. I didn't know how I was going to get a service position. I didn't even know how I was going to be able to read the readings in this program because I couldn't see standard size print. And I had a dear home group member who would enlarge our preamble, what is AA, until I got to the place where I could read it. It was in 72 font, and we put it in a folder so that I could flip the pages easily enough to read the preamble. And I would read that meeting after meeting after meeting. Now, I just want to step back for 1 second, because in the history of my drinking, I never read except for like bills, things that I absolutely had to read. And so I had forgotten how to read. I didn't read enough to remember how to read. And the eye doctors told me that I was forgetting how to read. So even learning how to read the preamble, and then especially trying to read it in front of a group, was very humbling for me. And I just proceeded and put one foot in front of the other. And every single time I got comfortable with one piece of service, God would put another piece of service in my path where I would become uncomfortable. And that's continued throughout my whole sobriety life. And it's been an amazing journey. So I continued to work the steps. I continued to serve in my home group. And then I became involved in that answering service and coordinated the volunteers who answered the phones for Alcoholics Anonymous in our local area. And that was really a learning curve for me. I had never used computers. I didn't know how to send an email yet. I didn't know how to do a lot of things. And so through service, I have really been able to uncover some skills and learn how to do different things that are, you know, life-changing things for me today. I work on computers every day now, and I do lots of things on computers, work with Excel spreadsheets, et cetera. So eventually along my service journey, I was listening about GSRs and general service work, and I didn't really understand it. So I said, okay, I'm going to try it. And so the first time that I stepped up to do GSR work, my home group elected me, and I went to the area assembly, and all of a sudden it became Father's Day, and it was a Sunday, and I had two children, and I had a husband, and I had a father of my own, and area assembly was going to meet on that Father's Day. And so with the assemblies meeting on those holidays, it became very difficult for me to fulfill my commitment. So that didn't work out for me that time around. I did step in and get elected a second time. And again, that didn't work out because transportation wasn't available for me. And we had a dark district at the time. So I couldn't fulfill my GSR position at that point either. And about 7 years ago, after my husband of 32 years passed away, I decided to stand for the GSR position and got elected the third time. And what I can look back at this point, I can see that my higher power had a plan for me. I didn't really understand that or see that back the first time that I was elected as GSR. But this time, I was able to complete my GSR work for 2 years. I have been able to fulfill my DCM position. I was also involved with the CPC committee. I was the chair for that. So I'm now in my seventh year of general service work. I'm currently serving as the alternate delegate at Area 47, and I have not missed one meeting due to transportation or any other thing. If I've missed an area assembly, it's been because I've had a family commitment or something in that line. And it's just been a wonderful journey and such a growing opportunity. It's really enhanced my sobriety. I'm excited. I get fired up about general service. I bring a lot of fun to some of the things that I do in general service. So as I stated, I'm currently serving as the alternate delegate. And when I started going to area assembly as an alternate delegate, I was going to present the concepts. And one of our past delegates said, oh, you need to do that in a fun way. And so I've been doing that by presenting skits on the concepts. And they're very short skits. And it just really touches on the concept. But we have fun. It brings other GSRs and DCMs into participation, because I usually ask them to participate in the skit with me. And so we just have a lot of fun with that, you know, and my general service experience has been pretty cool. It's really allowing me to bring some inclusivity to my area, and also to AA as a whole, because not knowing how to read Braille and only using electronic formats, you know, there's some difficulties that are around that. And I didn't even know that until I started this process in general service. So reading a PDF with a screen reader is quite challenging. It often will scatter documents and jumble them around. And if there's an Excel spreadsheet embedded in the PDF, it you know, I read it vertically rather than horizontally. And so, you know, I'm always learning. And the really awesome part is that, you know, people who have sight, they don't know this, right? So I feel like God's put me in this position to learn myself, and then to be able to help others learn how screen readers read documents and things like that. So it's really been a positive experience, a challenging experience, but a positive. I'm currently interacting with a brand new GSR out of Canada who's also a screen reader user. So we get to collaborate and we get to try to figure out things together. And then I get to go to like my delegate and say, hey, you know, can you help me with this Word document? Because it's not reading properly with my screen reader. Things like that. And then I get to pass it along to others. And, you know, for me, that's a beautiful thing. I just want to talk a little bit about God, because I was so angry at God. And when I came into AA, that I literally shut my ears off when I was in a meeting and heard the word God. And at some point, I heard somebody talk about God could be anything you wanted God to be. And so they talked about, you know, first group of drunks, and then I heard good orderly direction, and then I heard go outdoors, you know, all these different perceptions. And so I was able to hang on to those and turn my will and my life over to my home group for a while. And then when I got directions, I could see how I was getting that good orderly direction, you know, and it evolved as I continued to practice these steps in my everyday life and learned how to meditate and pray. And, you know, I have a God of my own understanding today, and he is all inclusive. And, you know, I go through different practices of meditation and prayer because I can get bored pretty easily. Some days I will sit for, 15, 20 minutes in silence. Other days I have to put on a guided meditation because I just can't quiet my mind down on my own. I do a couple other practices of prayer and meditation, like a two-way prayer where I journal what's going on in my mind, and then I sit in silence, for 3, 4, 5 minutes, and then I go back and I journal and try to write down what's coming to me from my higher power. And that's been a really enlightening experience as I've done that type of meditation. I am just so incredibly grateful to be an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and hope that I can just continue on the journey that my higher power wants me to be on, one day at a time. Now, I would like to share as I close up here is that I did have a subscription. Or not a subscription. I have a subscription of the Grapevine, but I have a story that was printed in a subscription back in the fall of 2019. It was in October 2019. And the title of my story was A Vision for Service. And that time I hadn't even been a GSR yet. Well, maybe I was, and I was nominated for the treasurer of our district, actually. And I had no idea how I was going to be the treasurer without vision. And my experience in every single service position that I've done is that I have not done it alone. The hand of AA has always been there, and I am so grateful for that. So you can go ahead and look in the archives of the Grapevine and read the rest of that story if you'd like to. And other with that, I'm going to go ahead and turn it back over to Chris. Thank you for hearing me today.
Thank you so much, Liza. I could certainly identify the chaotic upbringing is part of my story too, and I know that you're talking about riding your bicycle. I've always been horrified since I've gotten sober about the putting other people in danger with my driving when I was drinking. It just and I got into a few accidents. Somehow I never ended up in legal trouble, but it just an inch or two in a different way, and things could have been much worse. But anyway, and also I remember being very angry at God at times, and not believing in God, and then I try to figure out how I could be angry at something I didn't believe in. But anyway, and the whole thing with technology, it's funny because about 2 weeks before the pandemic really hit and everything shut down, I was working. I wasn't in this job then, but I was working as a freelancer, and I had been doing some work for another company, and they asked me to come on to Zoom. So I had to get myself set up on Zoom, and then 2 weeks later, we had to shut our meeting down, and I knew how to use Zoom, and I got us online really quickly. So I always felt that that was a bit of divine intervention as well. Anyway, thank you very much, Liza. It's really inspiring to hear you. I do have a few announcements. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area, or your district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet that's called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix, and you can find it on AA.org. Grapevine does not accept direct contributions, but of course, we do have expenses. And the best way to support Grapevine is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the apps. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting aagrapevine.org. You can subscribe to the app by searching for AA Grapevine on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Grapevine books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. And by doing so, you'll be supporting both Grapevine and your local office. You can also visit the Grapevine online store at aagrapevine.org. The AA Grapevine Carry the Message Project allows you to help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit aagrapevine.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free on all podcast platforms and on aagrapevine.org. And also check out Our Primary Purpose, the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous. Tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. For all the podcasts, be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch all the episodes. And please follow Grapevine on Instagram and on YouTube. The second speaker today, Spencer, he and I have become friends over the past few years, working in service and going to meetings and that sort of thing. Please help me to welcome Spencer.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Spencer. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Spencer.
Really glad to be here. Liza, it was great to hear you. You've overcome great challenges and shown that it can be done and recovery is available to everybody no matter what. So thank you for speaking. And Chris, thanks for having me here and all that you've done for the Grapevine. I love alcoholics because the Grapevine has a half hour, 1 hour variety show. You know, who else would, and nobody laughs. I mean, we just all get that, right? I mean, the normal person would say half hour, 1 hour. So anyway, grateful to be here. I just love to talk. And then I get in front of people around a meeting and I get scared. I don't know what to say. My sobriety date's August 28th, 1994. It's not the first time I tried to get sober. I went through a rehab and a lot of programs in the 80s and nothing ever really stuck until 1984. I don't remember my first drink. I know I sipped my parents' beers and there was three kids and two parents and we used to fight over the cherries and the Manhattans because I don't know if we liked the cherries or the alcohol that they were soaked in, but I did have drinks before my last drink or before my first drunk. My first drunk that I remember, I'm from Denver. It was the 1977 Super Bowl, Denver versus the Cowboys. Denver lost. But I was with my big brother and we were up in the mountains at a party. I was the younger brother tagging along. And I remember that was the first time I had been drinking and I was drunk and I liked it. And I could probably tell you right where I could go right there right now. I knew where I was. I was drinking because I wanted to fit in. I wanted everybody to like me. And I was looking for the woman of my dreams that night at age 15. And she was, you know, I was certain some woman was just going to want to be with me. And then you fast forward to 31 years old. I was at my sister's house, drinking to fit in, wanting everybody to like me, and hoping I'd find a woman of my dreams that wanted to spend the rest of her life with me. And I say that because the reasons I drank really weren't that different from my first drunk to my last drunk. I learned when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, we're really not that creative. We all do the same stupid stuff when we drink. I have a friend who's got over 4 years of sobriety now. And his first drink and his last drink were literally across the street from each other. And he always says alcohol never took him very far. And the same with me, you know, I was drinking to fit in and be liked. And at the beginning, I was drinking to fit in and be liked at the end. And in between there, everything happened that we hear about. I learned to lie. I bounced checks. I ruined relationships. I got fired from jobs. I learned to quit the job before I got fired. I went to jail for stupid stuff, drunk and disorderly and interfering with arrest. And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous thinking I was some alcoholic stud, and I learned that I'm really not that different than anybody else. You talk about the incomprehensible demoralization. I've had some of that in recovery, but I really had it before I found Alcoholics Anonymous. I just put myself in the worst positions, and I had great jobs and had great people in my life. I had dated great ladies, and all of them went by the wayside. All the jobs and situations and friends went by the wayside because of alcohol. I was a fun drunk. I'd go into a bar and everybody'd be happy I was there. And within weeks, or maybe not even weeks, they'd learn that instead of, oh, Spencer's here, yay, it was, oh, Spencer's here. And of course, I thought I was the funniest guy in the bar, but it never turned out that way. I just burned bridges after bridges after bridges. So what happened for me, I was married, and well, I went to rehab, and within a year after getting out of rehab, I got married to this lady. She was my hostage. And I went to rehab. I went to meetings for 90 days. I never went back, and I started drinking again. And I started experiencing that mental change that it talks about. I became a different guy altogether when I drank. And I went from bubbly and outgoing and fun. I'd have a couple drinks, and I'd become an introvert, and I'd be shy and paranoid, and that spiritual change happened to me. And I smoked at the time, so I tell my wife at the time, I'm going to go out for some cigarettes. Do you want anything, honey? You know, like the good husband. And I'd stop for a drink, and I'd come home 2 or 3 days later. And I was good at this. I could spin a story, and she believed me 4 or 5 times. I mean, I was good at, I could rob a bank and Chris could get arrested. You know, I just was good at spinning stuff. And so I came home one night, June 1st, 1994, and I sat her down and thought I would explain to her, as I had back in the 80s, that I had a new problem with alcohol and drugs are part of my story. And I sat her down to explain it to her like she had no idea. And instead of loving me and driving me off to rehab like she did in the 80s, she told me I had till noon the next day to get out. I woke up, both cars were gone. I should say I came to, both cars were gone. There was a note on the table that said I had to be out of the house by noon. So, you know, thinking I was so hip, slick, and cool, I called her up over to mother's house to, you know, talk to her and have her come back. And there was no conversation to be had. I was told I had till noon or the police would take me out, which I know now there was no right to do that, but that was what they said, and it scared me. So I grabbed a backpack full of clothes and my bicycle, and I rode away from my house. I spent the summer of 94 living in a park in Boston. I found a refrigerator box, and I tucked it off kind of in the corner. There was an old soccer net there, and I kind of fashioned a little place where I'd be safe from raccoons or animals. And I lived in the park in the summer of 1994. And talk about denial. I still didn't connect the dots about the alcohol. I was mad at her. This was her fault. And that just shows you that my level of perception of what the problem was really skewed. So what happened from there, I had lost my job, of course. I'd been fired. A guy that I work with, I had disappeared from all friendships and everything, and he had talked to my ex-wife, and she said she didn't know where he was. She thought I was somewhere nearby, and he came and he found me, actually. We ran into each other. And through a series of events between he and my brother and sister, they flew me to Arizona, where my brother and sister lived. And this is where I was changed forever. My sister drove me around from rehab to rehab. This was in August. And nobody would accept me or would admit me. The beds were for real bad street drunks. And at the time, you know, I was showered and clean and driving around in my sister's Mercedes, and she's got her little dachshund under her arm, and we're walking into these places. I didn't exactly look like a street drunk. So we were at one of these places, and she started yelling at the young lady at the counter, like, you know, this is ridiculous and somebody's got to help us. And I don't remember the words, but she was yelling at this receptionist. And a man came out from behind, from the back, and told my sister to stop yelling, and she did. And nobody's ever stopped my sister from talking or doing anything. I mean, she's a strong woman. And he said, why don't you just, you know, tell us what's going on? And we did. And he said, bring your brother back here at 5 o'clock when I get off of work, and I'll take him for a cup of coffee. And my sister just did what this guy said, and I was sure it was a setup. I thought, there's something wrong. There's something going on with this. And she took me back there at 5 o'clock, dropped me off, and she drove away. And I'm in a car with a perfect stranger, and he starts driving, and we're talking about my problems and my getting divorced and blah, blah, blah. And we pulled up to an AA meeting, and he said, let's go into this meeting. And I was a little taken back. I said to him, I said, I thought we were going for coffee. And he looked right at me and he said, don't worry, there's coffee here. I was so mad. Nobody spins the tail on me. I'm the guy that spins stuff. Nobody out talks me. But I didn't know what to say. I couldn't get around this guy. We walked in and he pointed right at the coffee. He goes, it's right there. So that was my first AA resentment. But this guy, there was something about this guy. I couldn't get around him. And I know now, and we're still friends, you know, 31 years later, this guy had 10 years of solid AA step work sobriety behind him. He was the real deal. He was in my head 5 minutes before I was. He knew everything I was thinking. He knew every game I played. He knew every BS line I tried to spin. And this man spent a couple of weeks with me, driving me around to meetings and talking to me, and we ate ice cream and we went out for coffee. And he really planted the seed of recovery with me. And I call him my first angel and my first resentment. But this guy said a couple things to me. I was getting my wife at the time had served me papers. I told him I thought she was kidding. He said, she's not kidding, but let's say she is. He said, get sober so you can make your marriage work. And I thought that was great. And then he laughed and he said, but she's probably not kidding. So get sober to make your life work. And it was a huge message for me that, you know, no matter what happens, if I'm sober, I'll be better off. So that started my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, go back to Maine, find a meeting and go in and ask for help. And I did. A woman came up to me after the meeting. I'm speeding this up a little bit so I can get all this in. Woman came up to me after the meeting and asked me what I was doing the next day. And of course, I thought because I was so brilliant, she wanted to go on a date with me. You know, I'm sober 3 weeks or something. And of course, who wouldn't want to date me? I said, yeah, let's go do something tomorrow. So she picked me up and we went to a meeting. Here we go again. And she pulled up to the front door and she said, go on in. So I figured she was going to park the car. I went in and she went home. And that was my second AA resentment. She had dropped me off at a men's meeting in Bath, Maine, and she had called some guys who were standing at the door, and I got out of her car and they're like, hi, Spencer, how you doing? And they all knew my name. They knew my story. But God bless her. She's a friend to this day. She had good AA on board, and she said, you need to go to a men's meeting. You need to go meet some guys. And that was a really big event for me. The third angel that came into my life that made a big difference, I was at a six-step meeting not too long after that. Of course, I had to raise my hand and tell everybody how smart I was and how I knew about the six-step. And after the meeting, this guy asked me if I had a few minutes to talk to him. And I can remember to this day, all I thought was, I'm getting divorced, I got no job, I'm broke, and this guy wants me to be his sponsor. I don't have time for this. You know, I'm 3 weeks sober or whatever I was. And he pulled me over to the side of the church after the meeting, and he said, you need to shut up and listen. And there was my third AA resentment. I'm like, what? You want me to stop talking? I was so full of myself. I didn't know what to say. I had never seen this guy. I never met him. I didn't know his name. I knew nothing about him. And what came out of my mouth was, be my sponsor. And it was divine. I thought, what did I just say? I had no intention of saying that. It just came out. And this guy changed my life. He said, yes, we went for that inaugural first cup of coffee, you know, to discuss the rules. And he said the stuff that we all say, you know, are you willing to go to any length? And I'm like, yes, sir. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. You know, I wanted to be like the good puppy in the room and get the straight A's. And he said, I'm going to only ask you to do what was asked of me. He goes, that's all I know. And if you don't want to do what I suggest, that's fine. He goes, but you'll have to find another sponsor. And I just kept saying, yes, yes, yes. And that very day, we started working the steps out of the big book. We read the prefaces and we read right up to the doctor's opinion. And he had me start writing out my drunkalog, reading the doctor's opinion. He had me write down everywhere I drank, everybody I drank with, what happened, where did I go, what did I spend, everything. And he wanted that for my whole life. I was pretty surprised. I thought, my whole life? He said, yeah, I want you to write down every drink you can remember. So it was a long process, but so very important for me. What came next was we went through it. And he wrote down that, look, you were homeless. You were living in a park. You didn't have a car. You had no car. You had no job, so you were broke. You had problems with your marriage. You were getting divorced, so you had problems with women. And I'm writing all these things in the edge of the paper. And then he said, I would now want you to read the Bill story every day and highlight it, make any marks or any notes that you have about that. Fast forward. Sometime after that, we sat in the back of this church in Bath, Maine, in his car, in the dark, and we turned on the lights, and he goes, so start reading me Bill's story. Let's go through that. And we were going through Bill's story, and he goes, oh, look at that. Bill was homeless. And then we go a little bit more. Oh, look at that. Bill was broke. We'd read a little bit more. Oh yeah, Bill was on a motorcycle. He didn't have a car either. And somewhere along the way, the light went off that everything that had happened to me in 1994, broke, no relationship, no car, no job, had happened to Bill in 1935. And that was like the epiphany for me, like, oh my God, I had conceded to my innermost self that alcohol was the problem. It wasn't my huge problem with coke or drugs, and it wasn't my ex-wife, and it wasn't the police that kept arresting me or my job. My problem was alcohol, and I learned it that night sitting in that car in the back of that church. And I started to weep and cry. And I'm like, can we turn this light off? I didn't want him to see me crying. But I'm sitting in the car with this guy, and I'm crying, and I'm like, oh my God, it's alcohol. That's the problem. And it was such a giant thing for me that I was all in, and I have been sober since then. About 31 and a half years now. I have had some mountaintop highs. I've had some really terrible lows, but I have not drank through any of them. I'm a pretty avid meeting maker. I do 4 or 5 meetings a week. Some weeks I do 10, some weeks I do 1, but I do a lot of meetings. My whole world is surrounded by people in recovery. Sometimes I wonder why I got it. I know so many sick alcoholics, some in my family, some of old friends, and God, wouldn't it be great if they could get what I've gotten? And I don't know why I was blessed with it, but I'm so fortunate to have gotten it. We had about a month ago here in Maine, we had a guy with 6 months sobriety doing the deal. He was going to meetings and sponsor and showing up, and he ended up drinking and blacking out and killing somebody. And it just hits you in the face like, oh my God, that could be me. You know, so I'm grateful for those that came before me. I'm grateful for those three angels that cared more that I got sober than whether I liked them. And truth be told, that's a difficult issue for me today in my recovery. I sponsor guys and I can get caught up in wanting them to be happy and like me versus telling them what they really need to hear. Sometimes it's hard for me to tell somebody, you've got a problem with X, Y, and Z. And if it was me, I would do A, B, and C. And because I want everybody to like me. I tell people I don't drink like an alcoholic, but I still think like one, and I still want you to like me. And I don't want to tell you what you might need to hear. But I remember those three people that, even though, you know, they were kind of funny when the lady dropped me off at the men's meeting, and that first guy took me for coffee, and, you know, they're funny, but they're really great, beneficial recovery moments of, you know, we have an obligation. And the responsibility statement says so, to be available when somebody needs it and to be honest with them. So that's my story. I could talk the rest of the day. I've been super active in service. I was a delegate for Area 28 in 2010 and 11, Panel 60. It was a lifetime experience for me. I still stay active. My partner is very, very active in the program. And so, our biggest complaint is we just don't have any downtime. You know, our weekends are full of meetings and seminars and trips and conferences and forums. And, you know, she's at the conference right now and she was making plans last week. I said, why don't we not make any more plans till after the conference? We just love recovery. So I'm grateful to be asked to do this today. Thank you, Chris, for all you've done for the Grapevine and for Alcoholics Anonymous. And Liza, it was great to hear you. And I wish everybody a happy and sober rest of the day.
Thank you so much, Spencer. I could definitely relate to drinking to fit in, just to be able to relax and like feel a part of. And, you know, it was very nice for a little while, and then it turned, you know. And I too have had a lot of angels in my sobriety. My first sponsor, Chuck, still lives in my heart. And I got to be somebody else's angel one time. He was living in a park and he had been a member of AA, and his wife had asked him to get out. And but she realized that he was living in this park. And so a friend of mine and I went and found him and got him to go to the hospital because he was seriously ill, dehydrated, and got him to go to rehab after the hospital. And then he lived another 5 or 6 years after that as a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And at his wake, his daughters came up to me and hugged me and thanked me for giving them their father for the last 5 years. Of course, I was just an instrument, of course, but it does feel good to help other people, for sure. And okay, thank you again. Please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting, so it's also ideal for friends who want to learn about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when you're doing cooperation with the professional community or public information work. I'd like to invite Liza to close the meeting in a manner of her choice.
Thank you, Chris. And thank you, Spencer, for sharing. I'd like to close with the I Am Responsible statement. When anyone anywhere reaches out for the hand of AA, I always want it to be there. And for that, I am responsible.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Okay. Take care. See you next week.
All right. Have a good day.